Welcome to Zessions. My name is Mandy Rourke.
My name is Sepna Srivastav.
We are both couple and family therapists, and
we want to do our part to destigmatize mental health and give a glimpse of what the mental health care experience can be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our session. For those of you that are new here, my name is Mandy Rourke. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist that practices primarily out of Austin. I'm also one of the co-founders of Zesho, and I am super duper excited to be here with my other co-founder and one of our partners here. And so I'll pass the mic off to you, Sepna.
Yeah, I'm Sepna Srivastav and also a fellow co-founder of Zesho. Welcome to Zessions. Zessions are conversations amongst clinicians. We talk about topics typically addressed in mental health, in the mental health world. And so there's the perspective of clinicians who support clients daily, and you get to hear about topics from the perspective of those clinicians.
And we are so excited to welcome you today, Katie. This is Katie Bates. She is a licensed professional counselor in Austin, and she is one of our partners of Zesho. So she's partnered with us to collaborate in offering different resources for parents, communities, and teens. That is her primary area of specialty. And so we are so excited to have you here. I think I've said excited 10 times already because I am so excited about this topic, which is positive discipline. We're going to be talking about positive discipline versus punitive discipline, but really highlighting a lot of what you specialize in with positive discipline, which I can't wait. And so first, why don't you share a little bit about yourself and anything that you'd like to kick us off with today?
Yes, thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so excited to even have you guys offer this platform. I think it's such an amazing space to bridge that gap for offering resources. I'm just excited to be here again on the excited train with you, Mandy. Yeah. So, but my name is Katie Bates. I'm a licensed professional counselor out here in Austin, Texas, and I specialize in working with adolescents and young adults 14 and up. And by extension, obviously, I offer family sessions and parenting support as a parent discipline educator, positive discipline parent educator. And before we dive into it, I just want to be mindful of my language. So I will be using parent and caregiver simultaneously or interchangeably. Just want to be mindful of those listening in who are adoptive parents, surrogate parents. Just want to, you know, be inclusive of all that are listening in who love their teens and are looking for resources and supporting their teens.
Love it.
Love that. Thank you for highlighting that for us. We're so excited to hear more. And so wanted to start off with what is positive discipline and what is the importance of it, especially as compared to punitive discipline?
Yeah, and I think this is such an important topic too. I think conversations surrounding parenting can be so grounding and validating for parents, right? I think there is an isolative factor that is not nearly talked about enough. You know, obviously there's mommy and me classes, obviously there's parenting resources, but for parents to talk about what truly is going on behind the scenes and open up about the struggles and the challenges, I think this is such an amazing opportunity just to have the frank, transparent conversations. If we were to relay anything in this podcast for this episode, it's that parenting is hard. And there are a million ways to parent, right? Positive discipline is just one of those ways. And at the same time, though, it's an alternate way, right? I think parents sometimes get pigeonholed to the idea of holding on to this concept of parenting when there are alternatives for you guys. There are resources for you guys too. And so really leaning into, you know, what else is out there? What are our options? And what can we kind of work with the situation that we're most, you know, forefront in? The unfortunate reality, teens don't come with a manual, right? And what I've mostly seen in my private practice is the majority of caregivers parent through fear. So more than anything, parents want their teens to be successful, independent, responsible young adults. And the fear of not accomplishing that is what drives a lot of parents' decisions, their behaviors, their communication, and ultimately that ends up affecting or influencing their relationship with their teen. You know, I think a lot of parenting, there's a lot of guessing as you go. And, you know, parents have an idea, I want to do this, I don't want to do this. And that may be on their own personal experiences and relationships that were modeled to them at an early age, but they have an end goal. The path to get there is what's daunting. It's what's overwhelming, right? And so positive discipline is what offers those guardrails to that final path. It's a yellow brick road. It's the paving of the path. You know, it allows parents to rewrite their relationship with their teen to balance both kind and firm while also maintaining that foundation of mutual respect. Punitive punishment is, it's hard, right? Because it may unintentionally be drawing forth resentment, revenge, rebellion, retreat, which offers like sneakiness, right? Unintentional reframe, which may elicit negative self-criticism or self-doubt in their teen. So again, parents know the end product that they want to accomplish, right? They know the end results they have for their teen. In trying to accomplish that though, they hold on so tight to that idea and that methodology of what they're currently doing, they may unintentionally be eliciting these five R's. So positive discipline, it comes from the Latin word to teach, right? So punitive punishment is a band-aid, right? It's making teens pay for the past. Positive discipline is rewriting that for looking towards the future, right? It's a long-term way of parenting that instills those lifelong skills and characteristics that parents want to instill to allow them to be responsible, independent young adults.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so good. I'm like, well, you did a really good explanation of that. I'm like, what else do we really need to ask around this, really? My first thought, though, just as you're describing positive discipline, this just popped into my mind around it's helping kiddos, teenagers know, and parents have a path of like, this is what we want to work towards versus like what we want to work against. And I think as you're describing the conditions of parenting being one that feel very fearful, a natural reaction for a lot of parents that, you know, I've supported in the past too, has been like, you know, what do we not want to have happen? And then we get dialed in on like, oh, this thing keeps happening. Why, we want this to stop happening. Can we get this behavior to stop? And it seems like with positive discipline, it's less about, let's, you know, think about the things we don't want to have happen and let's guide you more towards and teach you more towards the options that we really do want to see more of, or some of those behaviors you want to see more of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope to talk about this difference kind of in the future, but it is very much the difference between reacting versus responding, mm-hmm. right? Punitive punishment is very much putting out the fires. It's reactionary. It's in the moment. It's impulsive. Versus positive discipline is kind of like giving you that broader picture, right? Again, those guardrails for that long-term path and that long-term goal. And it's responsive. Mm-hmm. It's parenting with an intention. It's parenting with that long-term goal in mind.
Yeah, I love that distinction because it's a lot more intentional and it's difficult because like, not only do you have to like kind of regulate yourself as a parent and really be able to think like, okay, what do I want to guide them towards? Especially when, in so many ways, like so many of us have grown up with a more punitive kind of model, not all of us, thank goodness, but many of us, and that's not anyone's fault or anything like that. It's just kind of how parenting has evolved over the years. And so, it sounds like it's asking a lot of parents too, because you have to regulate yourself. You have to learn this technique. You have to like really kind of train yourself to show and guide in this way. And so I'm curious, are there specific like tenets or principles or anything like that, that you really share with parents to kind of help with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of parents come in with the teen as the identified client, right? It's like, we're having this familial issue. The teen is the one with the misbehavior. And that's the initial focus, right? That's why they onboard for therapy. When reality, right? Realistically, the parent's like, wait a minute, I got to look into my own stuff, right? Because I'm also having that emotional reaction. I'm also contributing to the unfair fighting. And so I think parents, you know, some of that, like, again, building that bigger concept is like, okay, what am I adding to the table too there, right? Because I may myself have, whether it be my own stressors, right, or my own fears that are contributing to what actually is going on.
I think for me, if, you know, being a parent myself and thinking about just all of the different kind of transition points that our kids and our teens go through, I think what you're bringing up is really important, because it's like when there is a challenge point, it can so quickly be just magnified on the kid and the behavior. And so it almost, I mean, I guess in therapy speak, it's a little bit of like pathologizing the behavior, and like there's a problem here. And I'm curious, as you talk with your clients, like how would you describe, or, you know, kind of attend to that with them, of like, is it really a problem that we're up against, or what language or approach would you use within that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think this is kind of why I love positive discipline, right? Because when we talk about, you know, the difference between punitive and positive discipline, it goes below the surface, right? Positive discipline, it identifies the root cause, right? So it's the classic, we're fighting about the dishwasher, right? The fight about the dishwasher is rarely ever the fight about the dishwasher, right? It's what's beneath the surface. And so positive discipline restructures fighting conversations, even perspective. It offers a different outlook on how can I actually kind of like think about this or resolve this. And it allows, you know, parents to kind of have that. We do tend to get stuck in that moment of like, this is very forefront. It's happening now. It's causing a rift in the family. It's very just, it's present, right? And a lot of conversations surround it, which becomes very forefront, and it becomes all inclusive of that family. Positive discipline takes that step back, right? And it's like, okay, this is what we're seeing on the surface, right? It's happening for a reason though, as well. And so kind of going to that root cause of sense of belonging, sense of self, concept of self, and it looks at that bigger, broader picture of what's going on with the teen.
Which I imagine that's part of the process to responsiveness too, where it's like very, very easy to have a knee-jerk reaction when something is undesired in front of you, your teen is cussing at you, or, you know, insert whatever other example. And so to just for parents, I guess, start gaining some awareness around, you know, what are some of those knee-jerk reactions, and notice that that's really just the iceberg kind of talking to us a little bit that we need to explore down below, that that we can. So it almost, as you were saying, that gives potentially parents some hope too, where it's like, it's not all about like what's happening on the surface. Like we have room to really explore what's down below.
Absolutely. And when you talk about fighting, right, like how often does it start with homework and then you get the eye rolls? Well, don't talk to me with that attitude. And then it becomes about the attitude, and then it becomes about the disrespect, and then it becomes about the three things that the teen did last week, where it doesn't actually stay singular to that actual, like, what is the point of us having this conversation? What is the point of us having this tumultuous conversation of what's going on and what we feel is kind of interacting or creating this obstacle in our day to day?
Yeah, it sounds like it's really trying to hone in on kind of the root of the interactions. And so kind of what you were saying of it usually is often the teen coming in, being said as the problem, but really it's what I'm hearing is like the underlying interactions amongst all of the family members with the teen that's kind of being addressed. And positive discipline is kind of like the technique that they can use to really hone in on kind of those, the not dishwasher conversations, but underneath those. And so to clarify though, when we're saying positive discipline, we're focusing on what we're wanting to kind of work towards as far as interactions go with teens, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily always like positive in the sense of like positive versus negative. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a very common misconception too, right? Because parents are like, well, I have to be buddy-buddy and I have to be friends. You're still absolutely able to uphold those expectations and boundaries that you deem appropriate for your family and for your teen. And so positive discipline, it does include saying no. It does it in a way that's mutually respectful and joint problem solving though too, right? I love you when the answer is no is absolutely okay in the positive discipline world.
Yay.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
I think that is a common misconception too. I mean, I think about just how hard, like you said, you already reinforced this, that it's hard being a parent and teenagers do not come with manuals, but this feels like a little bit of a guidebook around how can we keep more of our focus on creating a environment of mutual respect in these times that we are disagreeing. How do we get clear even on the boundaries that we have within our families? Because even as you're talking about this, I can think about a lot of parents who are like, I feel like it's this, but I've never really been that clear with myself around what are these boundaries that I need to uphold with my teen, not being rules necessarily, but just more of like, this is the way that we have a respectful relationship between one another. And I'm curious of like, as you work with teens and families, is that a big part of your conversation too, of just helping them define what those boundaries are?
Absolutely. And I think it's reformulating it, right? Because that punitive punishment, again, it's the reaction, right? It's the band-aid for honestly the bullet wound, right? Positive discipline, it's that long-term parenting. So it also invites proactiveness too. Especially in teens, right? Driving, drinking, parties. A lot of parents don't actually think about that until they caught their teen at the party drinking, right? And so it also, by inviting family meetings, by inviting conversation, it allows parents even the opportunity to step in and say like, oh, wait a minute, you're in ninth grade and you're thinking about parties. Let's hold on. Like, let me actually, as a parent, like, how do I feel about this? And how do I want to set the expectation for what I deem as appropriate, whether it be safety, whether it be decision-making on the teen's part? And I think that's where we kind of get into that pigeonhole of parenting through fear, right? We go to the worst case scenario, we go to the what ifs, and that's where we get stuck on too. So I think positive discipline, having that reformulation, it allows that long-term parenting to be more proactive, whether it be through conversation, through pre-setting those expectations, especially as a teen when they're facing the world, right? And I think we're seeing things in the teenage world that we would have otherwise seen in college, where parents, ignorance is bliss, they're at college. Now we're seeing it in the high school world, so.
Oof, that hurts to hear. I'm like, yes, I think you're right about that. Honestly speaking, it scares me, you know? So it goes back to exactly what you're describing here, is that parents live in a state of fear. And as we think about today's times, I think it is heightened by way of what we know to be true about the teens population and mental health struggles that they're up against. And I think if I'm just thinking about this in terms of supporting parents around, when going back to the no, can you give us some alternative language of like how you would help a parent not naturally start with the no's or the don'ts? Like, what's the kind of, what's your approach in helping, not coach, but just teach in session?
Yes, absolutely. So teens are also, I think it's appropriate to think of like what stage they're developmentally in, right? And so teens are at a stage where they're creating that sense of self, right? They're creating their own opinions, how they feel about the world, what their place is in the world too. So in order for them to exercise that and grow that sense of self and that sense of belonging, we have to provide those opportunities. So developmentally speaking, parents should be saying yes 5 times to their one no, because I would much rather a teen have that sense of concept, sense of self, and learn that while they're still in the support system of their home, then move out and get to, you know, their adult phase and have that like learning curve, be like, oh, this is the world. So kind of what you're speaking towards, Manny, in terms of, you know, verbiage for that, right? You can absolutely say yes, and what was our agreement? Yes, as long as. Yes, I expect. So you can still hold those expectations in place and those boundaries in place for not being a total pushover as a parent with positive discipline, but it's also doing it in that respectful way. I'm asking for your room to be clean. You're asking to go to your friend's house. Let's come up with a mutually agreed upon yes, as long as your room is clean. So we can use some of that verbiage too.
I like it, versus being like, no, your room isn't clean. That's mm-hmm. punitive of like,
absolutely
said. Yeah. And I think along those same lines of thinking about this as an approach. It feels like a philosophical approach too, meaning like, this is how I want to, or this is how I believe my role as a parent is with my teen, that I, and maybe this is where a lot of work comes in for parents that had more of a punitive style of discipline in their growing up, that they, the way that they view their parent-child relationship is one way, based on how they were parented. And now I do feel like there is a philosophical shift within this, where not that the teenager is exactly an equal, but they're definitely not as in the one down, you know, I know all and you know nothing kind of approach. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very extreme, but I think it may be helpful for us to like talk on that a little bit too. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind for you?
Absolutely. So, and I think it also, it's that reshift, right? Where it's now, it's not so much top down, but it's more of a co-pilot. I'm here to help you fly the plane if you need it, while also allowing you that opportunity to learn and grow through those mistakes. So it isn't necessarily equal, because you can absolutely take off autopilot if you need to, right? That's an option, the exit strategy. But it's in a space where, one, again, that teen has the opportunity to obtain those long-term skills and characteristics that we want to instill while it's still supported, while it's that co-piloting situation.
I love that, co-pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a great metaphor and way to paint it, because it is still, there is still a guidance. There is still very much like, I am the one ultimately in control as the parent, but I want you to practice being the one in control of your own life under my guidance while we still have the chance and as much as we can. And so that's a great metaphor for it. I do find myself still going back to the parent piloting and knowing how much it is a struggle to just be human as a parent as well, and also like try and regulate themselves while they're guiding their co-pilot as a child and as a teen, and kind of becoming their own pilot as well. And so are there any specific tips or you know, tricks or suggestions that you give to parents in really being able to like get to that place where they can respond, or like giving themselves kind of compassion when they're not able to get there, anything along those lines?
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point too, right? Is a lot of parents, sometimes we escalate, we don't even know that we've escalated, right? And so caregivers doing their own work, figuring out what their stuff is. What is it that sets you off? Is it the eye rolls? Is it the talking back? So by building that insight, they're better able to kind of enter those conversations and have just a more mindful awareness of, oh, they eye rolled. I know that's my own stuff, right? And so we can be ready and prepared for those red flags. We are only able to change what we're cognizant of. And so by building that insight and by having that just that look inward of just kind of, here's my stuff, here's what sets me off, here's what I'm bringing to the table, it sets you up in a much better position to handle those conversations or to enter some of those more terse times. I think another opportunity too, though, taking a break, right? When it's needed, when it's desired, if we're in a space where it's no longer constructive, it's the classic example of the airplane oxygen mask, right? You have to take care of yourself before you're able to take care of others. And so positive discipline is wonderful, excuse me, and that it's not about being the perfect parent, right? It's not about saying the right thing at the perfect time with the perfect, you know, meet cute. It's those moments of overwhelm that we're able to teach and to model, right? So by taking care of your needs and creating that space where it's saying, this is at a space where it's no longer constructive. I love you too much to fight with you right now. I'm going to take 5 minutes. You're modeling, one, that it's okay to have feelings, right? You're modeling that it's okay to express those feelings in a healthy way, in a way that's fair fighting. And it's absolutely okay to take care of those feelings. So you're modeling much more than it is to just like be in that fight and become that power struggle. You're modeling how to actually regulate yourself and how to actually take care of your needs because your teen is going to pick up on that.
That is, I think, like the biggest quest of all parents is to really get clear around what is my stuff that comes up with my kids and why is it coming up? But then also, I mean, I love that statement that you made. We like, I don't know exactly what you said, but something along the lines of like, we have, the only way we can be able to change is if we're aware, we're cognizant of what needs to change. And I think I found myself just thinking about, you know, people that I've supported too, and how hard of a practice it can be to be able to regulate in moments of stress, where, you know, I'm picturing a parent who's coming home from a long day, then they're met with, you know, multiple, you know, teens kind of pulling at them for this permission slip. You didn't do this. We're supposed to have cupcakes made for tomorrow. And it's like everything all at once, kind of chaos that a lot of parents will experience. And so maybe even in some of those moments, it's not as much of there's a specific clear trigger, but it's also just, you know, maybe the trigger is the chaos, you know, and for people to be aware, or parents or caregivers to be aware of, okay, I tend to get overstimulated very quickly. And so when that happens, it sounds like the way that you would help is really helping them learn how to, you know, take a break in those moments, but then also use some of their language to guide and teach in those moments, where it could be that the parent says, you know, guys, like, I am way overstimulated right now, one at a time, rather than maybe what they want to say, which I don't need to say it loudly in here, but it could be very aggressive and hurtful unintentionally because that parent is dysregulated. So I think it feels to me that this is, the regulation is the key part of it, because the regulation is what equals reactivity, and reactivity is what equals punitive. So I'm sure that a lot of your work is really around helping them come up with techniques and just gain more and more awareness into what is your emotional experience just in general with your kiddos.
And we're imperfect humans, right? Even we can be as aware and cognizant as all get out. We could be, you know, we could have a dictionary on ourselves and say, oh yeah, this points to this, and this is why this, and da 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 da. We still have snap judgments. We still make snarky comments, right? We still catch ourselves in those moments of life, because life is stressful. Stress is unavoidable. And so you're absolutely right in that even though we may have all of these tools in place, we can also still be human, and we can also still be imperfect as well. And I love positive discipline. So family meetings are a huge tool that positive discipline leans into. And so again, creating that proactive approach. So we can have that family meeting and say, you know what, Wednesday night was way too much of a cluster for me. Here's what I need moving forward, right? Here's what I need as a parent, as an adult, to appropriately support 17 things that are going on at the same time. And it's having those conversations of, I did feel overwhelmed in that moment, and here's what I need. Again, that mutual agreement, that respect, that co-piloting. I'm here for you just as much as you may be a support system to me, right? And having those conversations and working through that overwhelm for the next Wednesday night, when there is another permission form and there is another extracurricular and we have to get dinner on the table, and, you know, but someone needs a ride to so-and-so, and, you know, so it's always continuing to kind of lean into growing through mistakes and being proactive with what's working and what's not working as a familial nuclear system.
Yeah, I love that suggestion of family meetings, because that does sound like such a helpful tool. And again, like being more of that modeling, these are my needs. This is me reflecting on what happened last Wednesday and what we could have done better together, what I could have done better in expressing what I needed in the future when that happens. This could be a better game plan for us. Like, what do you all think? What are your needs in that moment? And just kind of acknowledging that together, like quite literally co-piloting, and kind of as the parent, primary pilot, I suppose, like readjusting your own course a little bit too, and kind of helping your co-pilot along in doing so as well, which is also kind of what it sounds like, in making sure you're regulating yourself too as much as you can. Again, we are human, we're only capable of so much, but even just within that, that's its own like positive guidance for sure. And just kind of modeling that ability of like, this is some of the things that tend to trigger me, and I'm going to do some deep breathing. I'm going to take a minute. I might go hide in the bathroom for a second, but yeah. I'll be right back, I promise, and we'll talk about this. And just really like that immersive experience of positive guidance for parents too seems really, really crucial.
Mm-hmm. And just as we spoke before, right, it's okay to say no, right? Setting those boundaries, setting that precedence. You know, as a caregiver, you have your own stuff that you have to take care of too, right? I imagine if you're a full-time, you know, employee, you have deadlines, you have your own work, you have your own stuff. So it's also absolutely appropriate to say, I'm willing to sign your permission slip up until 7 p.m. I'm willing to help you out with your homework up until 8 p.m. After that, I've got to take care of me, right? I have my own stuff. I'm willing to help you. I'm willing to support you up until this time, right? And so again, saying no is absolutely appropriate. It's okay to set those boundaries, and it's okay because in hindsight, it's also teaching your team, I have a deadline. If this is a priority to me, here's my window, right? So it's also, again, instilling those life skills, throwing the ball back in their court and allowing them the opportunity to exercise decision-making, time management, prioritization, more of those executive functioning skills that allow them to be those independent, young, responsible adults that we want to see.
I think that's huge. And as you were saying that, it feels like one major benefit to teens or kiddos that have their parents that align with this approach is confidence, self-agency, self-worth. I mean, just having this positive attachment to their self and their capabilities as a teenager, where I've definitely worked with like like mother, daughter, father, son kind of dynamics, where there was this power struggle, as we called in therapy, of like just this back and forth, back and forth. And a lot of times it was the teenager just really wanting to feel respected and, you know, be considered. Like they wanted their opinions to be heard. They wanted to be part of the family, which does directly, I love the family meetings, because it goes back to, we have this container. We have this structure to help minimize the anxieties that everyone are feeling, because we're all in this together and we're all collaborating with each other around what's going to work best. But ultimately, I think that the teen walks away being like, all right, like I am capable, versus I am dependent upon my parent to tell me how to do everything. The parent is more so saying like, yes, here are my boundaries. And by way of setting those boundaries and having this container or structure, that's where a lot of the learning takes place just inherently, right?
And I think it sets the stage too for them to practice that as well, right? In family meetings, everyone has a voice and everyone is heard. So having that inclusivity, having that acknowledgement of like, you matter, right? What you say and what you do, that is a part of this nuclear family and the decisions that we make for this family. And it also just goes back to relational too, right? So if we have a better idea about what our teen is going through, what their belief is behind the behavior, we're going to be much more suited to help support them in a capacity that is much more supportive than us just guessing or even guessing wrong, right? Because we don't know what's going on in our team. You know, they're at school 8 hours a day, and then they have practice, and then they have their job, and then they have their extracurriculars. I know a lot of families are lucky if they have family dinner. Mm-hmm. And so stepping into their worlds and actually acknowledging like what's going on and how can I best support you is going to allow them to build that concept of confidence, self-concept, all of those really good things that allow them to be a holistic being.
Yeah, that sounds so crucial for teens developmentally, especially. And so I'm also thinking too of parents also transitioning with their teen into this teen's developmental phase, right? Of, you know, we're maybe accustomed to having a child who's a little more dependent on us. And so having a little more control over outcomes, and then all of a sudden we blink and they're in high school and I'm not looking at maybe making a face right there. And so they are becoming their own person. They are developing their own self-concept. And that could be a really hard transition for parents too. And especially if they have multiple children across multiple developmental phases, right? And so are there any ways that you help parents and guide parents in making that transition and kind of reminding them, like, this is a little bit different now that they're entering into this teen phase, and your dynamic's going to look different, and the expectations from you are going to look different, the expectations from them are going to look different. What does that usually look like for you in your work?
And I'm laughing too, because Mandy, we spoke earlier about the concept of time, right? Like you snap and they're 16 and you're like, wait a minute, hold on. I was tying your shoes, you know, just yesterday. Mm-hmm. So it is the concept of time too. You're absolutely right. It tends to hit parents where they're like, oh, wait a minute. I'm taking you to get your license today, right? I'm seeing you walk across the stage at your graduation. Where I think it takes a lot of parents those big monumental moments for them to kind of even accept that their kids are growing up, right? And even have that opportunity to be like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not tying your shoes anymore. And you are making decisions for yourself and creating opinions about the world and having more in-depth conversations about worldly views and worldly concepts and not just that the sky is blue, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's definitely a transition. It's not going to be the flip of a switch. I think it also, there's a huge, for parents, there's a huge confusion between by letting go, I'm no longer caring. And I think for parents, that's why they hold so tightly to that sense of control and that sense of like continuing to allow them to be dependent on them and continuing to hold on to that sense of control. And I think a lot of the work is allowing parents to trust that letting go process and trust that they're still a vital role in that teen parent relationship. It's just in a different role that looked way different than when you were tying their shoes and they were 6 years old. So definitely transitional, definitely taking it step by step.
I think that's just a massive thing to reiterate within parenting, is that parenting is this revolving door of just changes and transitions and life events that, you know, as soon, and I've talked to so many couples, it's like, as soon as you get used to doing one thing with your kiddo, then it's like 2 days later, you're like, what happened? That used to work. This is different now. And I love it. That's one of the beauties of parenting, is that there's constant evolving and changing. And at the same time, what it makes me think about with some parents, if they're listening, of being like, oh no, we have been more punitive. Yikes. We didn't know that we were maybe more reactive in that approach. Maybe we could tell that something didn't feel right, but maybe it doesn't feel right because it's just not working in ways that it used to. And so I think my question here is, you know, how do you help clients or parents or whomever supports teenagers make a transition potentially from punitive to positive? And is it, you know, I imagine it's not an overnight switch, but what would be kind of the conversation you'd start to help them in that transition?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I that's my favorite part about this work too, right? Is positive discipline. It tends to be more hands-on and that it's experiential. So what we do in sessions is we work through classic things that parents of teens are seeing, right? And it's going through experientially, what is the communication I'm using now? How am I just like, if I were to just solve this tomorrow, what would be my go-to? What's my MO? And then taking positive discipline and leaning into that lens of how is what you're doing influencing and impacting what your teen is thinking, feeling, and deciding about themselves and the world around them. And so through that experiential exercise, we can take what they're already doing, instill some of those tools, have those conversations, and then spit it out into a space that's more positive discipline appropriate and that aligns with those long-term parenting goals. And so that's my favorite part about the parenting support, is going through these experiential exercises. And we talked about the flip of a script, right? Where you can see it on the parent's face. They're like, oh, wait a minute, right? Because I do sometimes, I ask the parents, put your 16-year-old shoes on, right? Like step into their world. And how does this feel if you were being talked to like this, or if things were being communicated to you like this as a 16-year-old self? And you're absolutely right. The first time a teen is 16 is the first time parents will handle a 16-year-old. The first time a teen is 17 is the first time the parents will handle a 17-year-old. and it is ever changing. And the beauty of positive discipline is it adapts as they grow, because you always have that foundation of mutual respect and the relationship with your teen. You can adapt and mold as you go, because it's a continued conversation. It's always growing. It's always adapting and changing as your teen continues to get older and more independent and autonomous with their lives.
I just am picturing the family meetings and just how differently they look, like month after month, year after year. And it's this model really of flexibility and growth, which I love.
What is the saying? The days go slow, but the years go fast. Is that the saying? Mm-hmm. It's so true. It's so, so true. And you're absolutely right. You blink your eyes and you're like, oh, hold on. You're 15. You're asking for your permit.
Yeah. It's like things that we once would have talked about at a family meeting have definitely changed their tone as you become a 17-year-old. Very different boundaries that we'd be discussing versus if you're 13 or 14. But I love that again, it's that structure that I think parents really need. Not just parents, but families. I mean, everyone, I think, benefits from having this of like, look, we're all in this together. We've got you. We have a process in figuring out what we do day to day, because it's not always easy.
And you're absolutely right. It is a process, right? I think my go-to phrase, I think I say it day in, day out, is teens are growing up. They're not grown up. And so adapting and molding to what do you still need to instill these life skills and characteristics while acknowledging I'm also an imperfect adult. I can't expect perfection from you as a teen who's still growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that line is huge. They're growing up, but they're not grown up. And that really hits hard, because I feel like people that have teenagers, they do feel like they do feel like grownups a little bit, or then it almost adds to the frustration that a parent has, because they're like, shouldn't they know better? Can be more of the, at least I've heard that feedback a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Of they are 17 now, they know what to do. And do you think that's true?
I think that's another piece of the puzzle, right? And work together too. It's the education surrounding positive discipline, but it's also the developmental education too, right? What can we expect developmentally from our teens, and what is going on with that brain development? Because the reality is your prefrontal cortex, your logic, understanding, processing, executive functioning skills, that's not developed till you're 25, 26. So I think it's also part of that education, realistically setting parents' expectations, right? You're telling me you want your teen to stay home and do homework, and he's saying, hey, my friends are going out right now. What do you think your teen is going to do? What do you think that they would rather do, right? So it's also, they're going to be imperfect while they're also working against an imperfect, underdeveloped prefrontal cortex as well. So it's also setting that expectation with just basic developmental education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one of my favorite things from the sound of positive discipline and setting this foundation with teens as they're transitioning through adolescence and into adulthood is kind of going back to those family meetings again too. It sounds like such a great foundation for families to transition into these kids becoming adults, like young adults, like going into college, and then eventually, like, you know, starting their own careers and starting their own families. And so these conversations can grow and can help like families transition into those phases. Obviously, slowly, it is a process, as we've discussed, but it sounds like such a good foundation of like setting up the co-pilot so that they're like, you know, I don't know, going on their own plane. I don't know what the metaphor is for college. They're piloting their own plane and then coming back home, and where command center is at. You know what I mean.
You got it. Yeah.
I got you. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it also though too, right? I feel there tends to be a negative connotation with family meetings, right? Because people immediately go to what is wrong. Why are we having this meeting? What is up? Right. And it's usually when parents have to drop the bomb is when parents get together with their teens or with their family. Right. So I think it even rewrites that narrative and that connotation too, of like, it's okay to meet as a family. It's okay to have these conversations. And it creates more organic, natural fluidity with positive discipline, right? We are openly talking about feelings. We are openly joint problem solving. And it also is just a really good opportunity to reconnect, right? Offer affirmations, compliments, celebrate victories, and just, you know, be silly and funny and rekindle and rebuild that relationship too, right? Because I think that's so important that life happens and it is so easy to get swept away into the minutiae of the day to day, right? We were talking before about informed consents are due and extracurriculars, and I have this and this and this and 17 things going on a Wednesday night. How good does it feel to just be, to sit and be present as a family and to share that space and that time to allow us to, like, hey, you are 17 now. Like, what is going on in your life? Let me step into your world and learn more about how your day-to-day is going, and having that opportunity to just reconnect. So
I love that you brought that up about the family meetings too. There's this show I'm watching right now called Platonic, and the mom sits the family down at the table. You can tell that it's like one of the first times they've ever sat down to have a conversation, and the teen is sitting there and she's like, okay, I wanted to call this family meeting. The teen's like, are you getting a divorce?
Yeah.
No, just want to talk about this upcoming week. I'm going back to work, you know. And it was one of these things that it does kind of bring me back to something I was hinting at a little while ago, which is, if you haven't been maybe following any kind of positive discipline approach, or you've really not had any kind of guide for your the ways that you parent, I think that can be part of a family meeting to just call it out, like, hey, everyone, there's no problem here. We're just trying something new. And I want to bring in, like, how would you like to have a family meeting? What are some of those, like, rituals or traditions we can bring in? So this does feel like a really cozy connecting time for us all, where it's like, it's not too late as parents to try this approach. Cause I think you can just say, like, hey, let's all, like, what do you think about this? What are some things you'd like to try as we kind of transition how we're all relating to each other, really?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like initially sometimes too, caregivers look at me like I have three heads. They're like, you want my teen to talk to me? They barely acknowledge my existence, right? Like, they're very thrown off by the idea of meeting and setting aside that time. I also want to acknowledge how much do caregivers talk, right? Even in day-to-day conversations, there's always room for a lecture. There's always room for, like, what did you do? This is how you did it. This is what's wrong. This is how you fix it. So it even, again, everyone at that table has a space to feel heard, feel acknowledged, and feel recognized. And so it also, like, if we allow them the opportunity to talk, they will open up. They will talk. It's when we immediately meet that talking with lectures, with nagging, with put downs, or any perception of judgment, that's when they shut down and that's when they clam up. And so I love the idea of having family time and having that rekindling of relationship through family meetings, because it means that not every time you talk, it means that it's going to lead to a lecture. Not every time you talk does it mean that it has to be negative. Not every time do you talk does it mean it leads to a fight. So again, it rewrites that narrative, what the teen knows to be true, saying, hey, I do have a voice here, and it is okay to speak up about what I feel is important and what I feel needs to be prioritized through a family meeting.
Yeah, I love that too. And I'm also thinking of families, again, kind of as Mandy was saying, like, as they're kind of adjusting to incorporating more positive discipline, like, it might be a big adjustment for some families, I would imagine, as they come to work with you. And so are there ways that you kind of suggest that they incorporate family meetings, like, kind of slowly, like, any tips to kind of transition the family into that process, especially if there is kind of a lot of tension with the teen or teens and the caregiver, that still needs a lot of safety to be created. There's, you know, kind of that contentious eye rolling because there hasn't been that space for them to share things positively, potentially. Are there ways that you kind of, you know, guide families and kind of starting these meetings in a way that kind of eases them into it?
You're spot on, right? Especially if there has been a lot of tumultuous, just fighting and constant dread of lectures and nagging. And when we kind of get into that concept of just, like, this is the behavior we're fighting against. When we introduce a family meeting, you are going to witness eye rolls because they're anticipating a lecture. They're anticipating getting in trouble because that's what they've known up until this point, is that's been their consistent. So I would love to recommend start with affirmations. If all you hold is a 5 minute, 10 minute initial meeting, and all you do is go around the table and say, thank you so much for walking the dog this week. Thank you so much for helping load the dishwasher. Offer affirmations and compliments and end the meeting. Rewrite the script of everything is going to turn into a fight. Rewrite the script of I'm not going to listen to you and talk over you. And even if that means like having a pencil as a talking stick, right? When someone's talking, they have that talking stick and everyone is listening to that person with that prioritized object. And you're absolutely right in that it is an ease and it is a transition, right? So we start with compliments, we start with affirmations, and then maybe we start with something fun, right? What do we want to do for a family vacation this year? Where would we want to go? See what they say, right? Start with something fun, start with something that's more easier for them to get buy-in towards, right? And then we can slowly work in harder conversations and more proactive conversations about what's going on, whether it be misbehavior, whether it be just daily routines and schedules, whether it be household expectations. And what I would love to add on to that too is have a notepad in the kitchen, right? Somewhere in a community space where everyone can write down agenda notes and everyone can write down something that they want to talk about during the family meeting. So it's not just parents initiating those conversations. You can have your 16-year-old coming to you and saying, I want to talk about the car parking situation because I'm tired of parking on the street, right? Like whatever they feel is appropriate, they can also too talk about that in the family meeting. They have that voice and that voice is heard and seen and recognized. So I think that's also important too, is our priorities as caregivers may be totally separate from their priorities as 16, 17, you know, even 13, 14-year-olds. As long as that's heard, though, it doesn't mean that we're going to lean into it. It doesn't mean that we're going to do anything about it. But as long as they feel seen and heard and you're respecting that relationship, that's the important part.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. I think very systemically around how families function, too. And so families have been functioning in this pattern of punitive disconnection, conflict. It's like more of like the nag to the nice, like that nag to nice ratio that is commonly talked about with parenting, where it's like this gives it such like just starting with this one intervention of the family meeting where now we're just starting with affirmation. I feel like it's just such that interruption that mm-hmm. pattern needs to be like, oh, well, hold on, things are different now. And mm-hmm. it just opens up more space for more of that change to evolve and grow. And when you were just saying that, I feel like that's pretty accessible for people to be like, let's just start with like the good stuff. And maybe it's a 5 minutes and that's all we had. But to me, it's 5 minutes that means so much more than the time. It's really demonstrating like we're changing some things up here and you all have a seat at the table and we respect that. And we're going to continue to do that because this is our new process as a family. So love it.
And when there is misbehavior too, how many conversations become about that misbehavior, right? How many things just become so flooded with the misbehavior? It's just a relief to talk about anything else, right? Anything that's separate from what's going wrong relieves that pressure valve.
Totally. One of my kind of final questions, just out of pure curiosity, of if you're working with parents and one parent is like, no, I want to do punitive. That's how I was raised. That's, you know, maybe their preferred method, and the other parent or caregiver is wanting to adopt some of these. How do you kind of talk through that type of situation?
Yeah. And that comes up a lot, right? I want to validate that not every parent has the same intentionality, or even just the way they parent is different too. I'm going to be very therapeutic with you and I'm going to answer your question with a question. mm-hmm. I think my bigger question is, why is that parent holding on to that parenting method so strongly? Right? Because that's what's holding them up, right? And what is behind why they feel that methodology should be prioritized and should be held so tightly? Let's lean into that, right? Because there's something bigger going on there. I don't think it's an issue of like, hey, who's doing what and why are we misaligning? Why am I willing to be flexible and why are you holding so tightly to this methodology that you feel is most appropriate? What's behind that space? So very therapeutic with you with answering your question with another question. but I think that's the bigger conversation right there. And that's where you need to start and dive in.
And I would imagine that there'd be some fear as part of what would be holding them back. This could feel really new and like, okay, is there a book I need to buy? Is there a chart I need to fill out or a whole new process? And it doesn't really sound like that. It sounds like you kind of get to get some professional support with someone like you, I think is definitely a helpful avenue to take. But I think it's also just getting curious around what would our dynamics look like if mutual respect was more of the focus versus on what we don't want to have happen anymore.
And it's even looking back a generation too, right? Like, how were you parented? What were your caregivers like, right? And what was that relationship? Because a lot of parents go into parenting, I do want to emulate this. I do not want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. And that's usually where they start with their parenting methodology. And so you're absolutely right, taking that a step back and having also that be part of the conversation too, of what is the bigger picture? Like, this is coming from somewhere, somehow, and you wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't offering you anything, right? Like, we're doing it for a reason. What's that root reason?
I love that. Very, like, it's a very positive guided or a positive discipline approach to positive discipline. Really looking at that iceberg underneath the water there. I love it.
We come full circle, right? Full circle.
Exactly. That was planned.
Nicely done.
On that note, coming full circle, as we're kind of wrapping up, winding down this conversation, it's been such a great conversation. Again, I really feel like we say this most of our episodes, but genuinely, Katie, I feel like we could ask you about this and talk to you about this for hours. But as we are wrapping up here, there are things that we haven't touched on that it would be helpful to, or any last minute kind of takeaways or messages that we want to make sure that people walk away with?
33%. If any baseball fans are out there, to get into the Hall of Fame, you have to get off base a third of the time. So to be in the Parenting Hall of Fame, all we're asking for is 33%. I know there is so much parent guilt and so much pressure parents place on themselves to do right and always have the answer and always do right by their loved ones. And I want to just ground that, right? Again, positive discipline is not being the perfect parent. It's about showing up and being present, right? 33%. That's all we're looking for is 33%. And what you do is more important than what you say. So, and with that.
I bow down.
Yes. That's so validating. And that's such a great way of putting it. And so thank you so, so incredibly much, Katie, for sharing this with us, for sharing your expertise. How can people find you if they're more interested in kind of hearing more of what you do and working with you, or just getting some more resources from you?
Yeah. So my website is going to be Kosela Counseling. So Koselig counselingtx.com. And all my website has all those resources and contact information. Feel free to reach out with any questions, concerns, comments, the whole shebang.
Awesome. Well, just to kind of echo what Sutton was saying, thank you so much. We're so grateful that you're a partner with us and helping just increase resources to parents, because we all need them. And I just know that you are going to help clients and their families just get into a really good kind of flow with one another, where they are walking away feeling just really capable and strong. So thank you for all of your work. And we look forward to picking up our conversation with you another time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invite. It's been so fun hanging out with you guys. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye-bye.